What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Almost a year into the COVID-19 pandemic, many arts organizations are looking at what's shaping up to be a second year of lost revenue as uncertainty persists about when and how people might be able to gather for something like a live concert, a play, or an improv performance anytime in the near future. The arts sector has been hit hard by the pandemic. The arts advocacy organization Americans for the Arts estimates the financial impact of the pandemic on this sector nationally has been more than $15 billion. And in a survey of more than 19,000 arts organizations, more than half said they expect the overall financial impact of the coronavirus pandemic to be very severe for their organizations. In fact, only 2% of those respondents said it wouldn't be very severe at all. In Vermont, the weight of the pandemic on cultural institutions is also being felt. The Vermont Arts Council estimates that more than 8,000 jobs were lost in Vermont's arts and cultural sector in the first 4 months of the pandemic last year. Some organizations are finding help in the form of government relief and many other kinds of aid programs. Last summer, Peter Welch introduced Save Our Stages legislation in the House, designed to offer 6 months of financial support to keep independent live music venues afloat through the pandemic. This bipartisan piece of legislation was co-sponsored by Texas Republican Roger Williams, and it matched similar legislation introduced in the Senate by Senators John Cornyn and Amy Klobuchar. The relief package passed in December as part of the second coronavirus relief package with the promise of $15 billion in direct aid to independent venues around the country. In Vermont alone, the Arts Council says nearly 500 individual artists have been given grant money to stay afloat, and cultural organizations received well over $5 million through various programs. So that's a little bit of the big picture. But we wanted to hear today a little bit of the very narrow picture, just a few examples of how performers and arts organizations are trying to stay afloat, are trying to come up with creative ways to continue performing or offering cultural events in their communities, and are trying to connect to communities that still need arts and culture, but are going to have to get it in a different way. First up, let's talk with Orly Yadin, Executive Director of the Vermont International Film Festival. This month, the festival is showing multiple films directed by Black women during Black History Month. Orly, what a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
So are you able to continue, you know, an international film festival now that we all have figured out to some degree how to use our technology to sort of continue to connect in these online and virtual ways?
Well, indeed, online and virtual is the word of the moment and will be probably for some time to come. Yes, since March last year, we switched immediately from in-person screenings, not just the Vermont International Film Festival in October, but also all our monthly screenings and our other smaller film festivals throughout the year. And it has completely changed how we work and also our relationship with our audience. Mostly, I would say for better and for worse, it's a bittersweet thing because we do miss seeing our audience, getting the community together, gathering at the festival or at any screening and talking about the films. This is all part of this experience of learning about cinema and learning about life around the world. But at the same time, so we don't have that, of course. But at the same time, because the whole distribution and exhibition, film exhibition patterns have changed since COVID, we are able to put on many, many more films than we used to. So we now, we are actually acting like an art house theater, and we open with new films, 5 to 10 or sometimes 12 new films each month. So we miss our audience, but at the same time, we've expanded our reach in a way geographically. I mean, we have somebody who watches all our films, and she's based in Alaska, or there's somebody in Texas. Of course, we couldn't do that before. However, it's been really tough because our members are used to you know, all kinds of benefits that we were able to offer them in, you know, in the past. And we cherish and value our members. They're an important part of our community. And it's much tougher with virtual cinema to offer the kind of benefits that we used to, even though we're doing our best.
What about financially? I mean, you know, are people willing to put down more money to go to a theater, to watch something, you know, to be in that sort of communal environment, or to become members and to pay more because of, you know, what they see happening sort of in the physical space versus now? Or are you finding that financially people are still eager to make sure that your organization and others like you can survive, and so are paying the same or more to make sure that you can sustain yourself?
Yeah, we're incredibly grateful, actually, to our members and other, you know, loyal audience who understand that it is a very difficult period for us. The income from virtual tickets is much, much, much smaller for us than physical screenings, much more. So we are much more dependent on membership income, on donations, on grants, etc. Because also, to be able to offer these virtual screenings with a make it a good experience for the audience, we have to invest each month in this expensive but very robust online platform that the film distributors demand we have. So our expenses are much bigger and the income is smaller. So far, we have managed to survive thanks to the generosity of members and donors, and also the wonderful grants that were distributed via the Arts Council, Humanities Council, you know, through the state. And, of course, the PPP CARES loan that has helped us not have to lay off staff.
So I mentioned these screenings of many films this month. I think four films that you're doing this month that are directed by Black women. Can you talk a little bit, maybe just about one of them, just to give us a flavor of, you know, what we might be able to see if we tune in?
I'm so excited by this series. We're showing six films, three short films, three feature-length films. Two of them are classic films that are not readily available, and sadly, not many people have heard about. Kathleen Collins' film from 1982, Losing Ground, is a really... First of all, it's a wonderful film. Secondly, it was really revolutionary, and even today, I think people watching it who are not Black will understand why it was so revolutionary. It's a fiction film. It's not documentary, but the power of fiction is, it's often more powerful to open our minds than documentaries. So, and it's just a family drama, the relationship between two people and various things that happen to them, or like happen to many couples. But because the characters are Black, and they're set in a very kind of intellectual, artistic milieu, if you like. This was something that was never really not seen before. Now we're a bit more used to it. But watching all that and the race element, the ethnicity, is barely mentioned, but it's alluded to in such a subtle way that you sit up and you're startled, and it's a great film.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. So if people are intrigued, how can they get connected with the Vermont International Film Festival to watch that and other screenings?
Well, our website is vtiff.org, and you can go either directly to Split Screen or Virtual Cinema, and there's a calendar of events. You can see what's playing at the moment. Regarding the African-American Women Filmmakers series that we just mentioned, we highly recommend buying a pass for the whole series, and then you can watch them all, you know, free of charge. The pass is very low cost. And also, we recorded two conversations with two of these filmmakers, so that comes as a bonus to the screenings.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Well, Orly, thank you for telling us a little bit about what you're doing, despite the fact that you can't have physical screenings, that the virtual screenings are going at least okay, and that some of it may stick around in the future. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Orly Yadin is Executive Director of the Vermont International Film Festival. And again, the film festival is doing a split-screen series in a partnership with Middlebury New Filmmakers Festival. And for Black History Month, they're showing four films directed by Black women. And we have more information on our website, vpr.org. Also, to hear more about events during Black History Month in Vermont, tune in to All Things Considered tomorrow afternoon to hear VPR's Henry Epp speak with Jarvis Green about JAGFest, a festival of black theater. Douglas Anderson, artistic director for the Town Hall Theater and Opera Company of Middlebury, writes, as live performance companies, both the Opera Company of Middlebury and Middlebury's Town Hall Theater resisted the thought of producing online. But once we jumped in, producing plays and opera and a wide range of events, we find that we're playing to larger audiences than ever before. A recent play had viewers across the country. A recent opera drew praise from a viewer in Vienna. And while nothing will ever replace live performance, the reach of the internet is such that I suspect we'll retain an online presence after the pandemic lifts. A surprising and exciting development. And Lisa Mitchell, who's executive director of the Town Hall Theater, also wrote in to say, recently our resident company, Middlebury Acting Company, launched Flash Forward, a series of filmed monologues written by local luminaries. Opera Company of Middlebury offered a micro-opera called Completing the Picture, presented in a Ken Burns-like documentary style. Soon it will create a full-length filmed version of Candide. We've been thrilled with engagement surrounding Doug Anderson's online play The Beams Are Creaking and Middlebury Acting Company's American Dream Play Reading Series. Our holiday jukebox raised thousands for the local food shelf and brought joy in a year without caroling. And we're busy planning an outdoor season featuring wide-ranging performances, which build on our experience with socially distanced outdoor events presented in early fall 2020, like Bread and Puppet, The Grift, and the play The Agitators. And let's go to Rick, who's calling in from Hinesburg. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an artist, a musician, and an author here in Hinesburg, Vermont. And it has been such a challenging time. I went from, you know, having a full calendar to basically last year having three shows. And so I had to scramble and figure out a new way of reinventing myself. And like many, I took to the idea of live streaming. And in cooperation with WOMMLP over in Burlington and Jim Lockridge, I have a weekly live stream kind of presentation that has really helped not only me, but a lot of the community worldwide. And I have a little, you know, one of those tip jars, a virtual tip jar, and people have been putting in contributions. So that has helped. I also was able to finish my book, Banjo Man, Adventures of an American Folk Singer. And the book has really been helping me a lot. And also, I was able to get a grant from the Vermont Council of the Arts, and that helped out a little bit. So I'm sort of surviving, but it's very challenging.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for calling in. And it's Rick Pellieri, right, if people want to look you up and find out more?
Sure.
Excellent. Well, Rick, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate hearing from you. And, you know, I think sort of muddling through seems to be the way that so many people are just trying to survive during this time. Let's talk now with Desmond Peoples. Desmond is co-curator for Vermont Art Council's I Am 2021 virtual exhibit. They also serve as the council's content manager. Hi, Desmond. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Can you talk a little bit about what I Am 2021 is?
Yeah, so I Am 2021 is the Vermont Arts Council's first virtual exhibit. We usually have in our offices in Montpelier the Spotlight Gallery, a physical gallery, but because of COVID, we couldn't do that anymore. So we're launching our new virtual gallery with this exhibit of 18 artists from all around Vermont of all different disciplines. And they are all also from our ongoing interview series called I Am a Vermont Artist. It's been running for 2 years, and it features artists from all around the state reflecting on how their creative practice reflects their backgrounds, their identity, be that from age, race, gender, sexuality, the whole gamut. So the exhibit gathers 18 of these artists and gives them each an individual gallery on our website where they share a little bit of their work. And this is videos, images, text, And then we are also on the third Thursday of every month holding a Zoom gathering, a kind of meet and greet with the artists on different subjects. So this Thursday, February 18th at 7, we're going to have a Meet the Artists event where they talk about how this moment in time, the pandemic, social change, the BLM protests, we've got so much going on in history. And so the artists are going to talk about how it's affected their practice. And then we're also going to have events March 18th, where the artists talk about their creative process in general. And on April 15th, the business of creativity, how the artists get their work into the world.
Desmond, do you find that there are opportunities created by having this kind of virtual space and virtual exhibit? I'm sure there are also challenges and downsides, but is there anything good about it that you'd like to keep moving forward?
Absolutely. With the council, just today we were talking about how virtual exhibits create a much better opportunity to show artists of different disciplines. You know, it's really hard to present a multimedia exhibit in a compelling way in a physical space. So with this virtual exhibit, we're able to display poems, we're able to display videos of any length, we're able to display, you know, traditional visual arts. And so that's something that we're definitely going to keep doing in the future. And also just the fact that anybody anywhere can connect with these artists. And that's really huge for the council. One of our biggest points is to be a convener of the arts and bring people together as in community. And so particularly for artists who are from these diverse backgrounds, maybe don't have so many folks like them in their community, bringing them together across distances is that much more important. And then allowing communities all across Vermont to connect with them over the virtual space brings more people together than you would necessarily in our small office, certainly.
Do you find that audiences, I mean, you know, one of the challenges for anything that's virtual that's on the internet is just is that it may be accessible to everybody, but does everybody know about it? Can they find it? Is it on their radar? And are they willing in a day or a week or a year where they're sort of virtualed out, you know, zoomed out, are they willing to sort of do that, go to the virtual exhibit, take part in something, whether it's on a given night or something they can do on their own time? Are you struggling with that at all?
Well, we so far haven't been struggling with that as much as I think we would expect. We've had a lot of virtual events over the year with the Vermont Creative Network. We've had a lot of strategic planning all with artists across the state. And with this event in particular, we've gotten a lot of great feedback. People are excited about it on social media. We've gotten great coverage in papers around the state. And I also think because this exhibit is so much about community, meeting the artist, having conversations and building personal connections, that makes this kind of virtual event that much more fulfilling. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate hearing about it. It sounds fascinating, and I can't wait to check it out. Desmond Peoples is co-curator for the Vermont Art Council's I Am 2021 virtual exhibit. Desmond's also content manager for the Vermont Arts Council. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jean. Bye.
Let's go to Hallie, who's calling in from Pittsford. Hi, Hallie. What's your experience?
Well, I'm a stained glass artist, and I do commissions and restoration. And I was preparing a new studio at the Pittsford Village Farm, which is a nonprofit property in Pittsford, Vermont. And after painting rooms for 4 months, I was all ready to launch my education program at the farm and offer group classes in stained glass. And that came to a screeching halt in March, of course, like everything else. My last class teaching at Yestermorrow was in March. I am on the board of the Vermont Craft Council, which for over 10 years, we've been organizing spring and fall open studios throughout the state of Vermont where people can tour artists in their natural habitat creating their artwork. And that had to come, you know, be reinvented as virtual studio tours as well.
Hmm. Are you going to make it? You think you're going to be able to, whenever you can, open up and have those in-person classes again? Are you going to be able to do it?
Well, I'm a member of the American Glass Guild and the Stained Glass Association of America, and their scholarships that they hand out to students. The deadlines are coming up. So I've been optimistic, and I've announced that I will be teaching stained glass and sandblasting classes the last week in June and the first week in July. Hopefully everyone will be vaccinated by then, and I'm being optimistic. The July 2nd, the Vermont Symphony Orchestra will be playing at the giving a concert at the Pittsford Village Farm as well. So we're very excited about that. There's plenty of acreage there to spread out. So,
well, I'm glad to hear about the optimism, Hallie, and good luck to you. Wish you the best of luck. Today we're hearing how different arts organizations and performers around the state are sharing their art through the pandemic. Many are holding virtual events like Cricket Blue, a Vermont-based band that gathered some musician friends and recorded a cover of the song Over the Garden Wall, each from their individual homes.
Night when the lake is a mirror and the moon rides the waves to the shore. A single soul sets his voice singing, content to be sightly.
That's Cricket Blue with Over the Garden Wall, and you can listen to the full song on Cricket Blue's YouTube channel. Mike's on the line with us from Starksboro. Go right ahead, Mike.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm doing a shameless plug for the Heritage Winooski Mill Museum, where my wife is the executive director. When the pandemic first started and lockdown took place, she saw this as an obstacle, but it quickly turned into an opportunity. I helped her renovate the museum, and we actually put together very quickly an exhibit using David McCauley's material. David McCauley wrote a couple of books like The Way Things Work and Castle and Cathedral, and all of his books are beautifully illustrated, and they have a little vignette story to go along with the art that's in the books. The one that we're showcasing is called Mill, ironically enough. And what it showcases is how mills are constructed and what they were used for historically over time. We managed to put this exhibit together really quickly with David's help. David actually lives in Norwalk, Vermont. So we were able to drive down to his place and pick up some material, bring it back up to Winooski. And we put together a really dynamic exhibit. And this is going against what other people have said. This is not a virtual exhibit. This is an in-person exhibit. You have to make an appointment beforehand and fill out a COVID screening form. But you can make reservations at themillmuseum.org to go and see his artwork. And I highly encourage it because you can look at his artwork and then look out the window across to the Chase Mill on the other side of the Winooski River and see exactly how the art correlates with the architecture.
That sounds so cool, Mike. So the David McCauley exhibit is at the Heritage Winooski Mill Museum. And shameless plugs are totally welcome in today's show. You can, of course, always put them on the VPR Facebook page or, again, call us 800-639-2211. Mike, I love that. Thank you. Let's talk next with Keisha Luce. Keisha is executive director of the Highland Center for the Arts in Greensboro. Keisha, nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for including me in this conversation.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. So, you know, Highland Center for the Arts has already had a pretty big outdoor space. Are you using that through the pandemic and even through the very cold winter we're having?
Absolutely. We decided to move forward this summer and present socially distanced outside performances. And it was really fantastic. We have such a beautiful patio and front lawn. It looks over Caspian Lake in Greensboro. So we thought we should really take advantage of, you know, the space that we have. And it was just such a wonderful summer despite everything. And this fall, we had Vermont Vaudeville approach us. They're a local theater company. They've done a lot of shows out of Hardwick every fall, and it wasn't possible for them. So we were able to share our space with another organization, which felt really good. And as, you know, snow was about to fall and we knew that we were going to have a long, tough winter in Vermont, we decided to do something and stretch our imaginations. And we opened the open air gallery, which is a ski and snowshoe trail. We were able to partner with our local farm next door to make it a 1.8 mile ski among art created by Vermont artists.
How cool. So tell me like one thing that I know that's so hard and it's unfair to ask the executive director to pick one, but show me one thing that I would see if I were skiing along that trail.
Well, the first thing you would see would be our warming fires as you enter the property. So it's a great opportunity to sit around, have a cozy drink. And then from there, you would see just work that ranges from the comical to the majestic. We've just got a big collection of Vermont artists sort of on a whole range of like for different tastes and experiences. So it's colorful, it's exciting, and we've had such a great response to it.
That's so cool. Are you seeing the same people coming and experiencing the work of the Highland Center that you were prior to the pandemic?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of familiar faces and so many new faces because I think people are really looking for something to do. And the trail offers a COVID-friendly way to meet with friends, get together with family. It's everything is centered outdoors. And it's also just sort of a way to enjoy Vermont's winter and what it has to offer. So we're very happy with it.
I understand, though, you're worried about mud season.
Oh, we certainly are. We do know, like, because we were lucky enough to partner with Wilson Farm, much of our trail is in their beautiful field. So as soon as it's time to sort of start planting, we have to move all the sculptures off of their property. But they've been wonderful to work with, and it just has really provided us the opportunity to do this type of work. And it's something that we probably would not have thought about if it was not, for having to operate under the pandemic and the conditions that it sort of threw at us. But it's been wonderful. And we've actually seen more visitation this year than we have in previous years.
The Highland Center for the Arts is, fairly well established, has patrons, perhaps has access, although I'm not saying that, this has been easy for anybody, but perhaps has access to financial resources and the ability to apply for grants and things. How are you helping smaller artists who maybe don't have that level of access or that level of sustainability, who are just really worried about this time and then the knock-on effect into the future?
Yeah, that is actually, that has been a concern for us. And we're sort of trying to do that on many levels. One is we're using the trail as an offshoot sort of to create projects. So for example, this weekend we have Peter Schumann of Bread and Puppet Theater coming in. He's going to do a fireside fiddle concert and bring the Bread and Puppet puppeteers. They're going to set up their cheap arts table for people to peruse and buy their wonderful products. So we're trying to sort of work in that aspect of it. And then we're also allowing our building to be used. Right now we're not having any inside performances. So we have a lot of space that is underutilized at the moment. So we've allowed Modern Times Theater, which is a wonderful Northeast Kingdom based theater group. They've taken up residence in one of our dressing rooms. We have Bread and Puppet Theater coming for a residency in March. So we're allowing like our space to be used so new work can be created when there's a need for it.
Well, it sounds like, there's still work to be done and a lot of uncertainty, but also a lot of community building within the arts community that's going on too.
Yeah, we're really trying to be, to service of the artists, because we know that we really need to support the creative process during this pandemic. So when it's over and we want to bring programs to our stage, there will be programs to bring. Another really fun thing that we've done is the local high school had an innovative idea to start an arts academy with a smaller group of students, and they needed a space to do that. So 2 days a week, we have 17 high school students using our main stage to create work. And that has allowed them to be in person you know, in a safer way.
That's Keisha Luce, Executive Director of the Highland Center for the Arts in Greensboro. Keisha, thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you.
We got a note from Nancy who says the Meeting House on the Green in East Fairfield has thrown caution to the wind and planned 9 outdoor shows for our summer music series. Beginning June 12th, guests can bring their lawn chairs, blankets, coolers, and picnics and enjoy great live music from our outdoor terrace. Some of Vermont's well-loved bands will be joining us right on through October. The lineup is at meetinghouseonthegreen.org, and Nancy says, fingers crossed for sunny skies. Let's go from one performing arts center to another. We'll drive south to Bennington and speak for a few moments with Jennifer Jasper, Executive Director of the Bennington Performing Arts Center. Nice to talk with you, Jennifer.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So like everybody else, you're all virtual at this point, I understand it. No ski trails for you in Bennington, but what have you been doing?
No, we don't have an outside venue hooked up to our space, unfortunately. We were able to have some performance in the fall with socially distanced seating in the theater, but then in November closed down again. So we moved a lot of our programming to the virtual platforms that everyone's using. And it's been a transition, but we're still able to do some programming and moving towards a more hybrid form to where performances can be done in the theater and then streamed live while we wait to open our doors to allow more people in. And hopefully we'll be able to open up to a limited audience with safe and distance seating as we're permitted as the year goes on. Right now we have like our monthly storytelling event is now happening on Zoom, and that's story night, and that's the third Tuesday of every month. And it's really interesting. It's less formal than you would have in a theater, but now it's become more like a fireside chat and people sharing stories. So it's taken storytelling to a more intimate kind of, it's a very different experience on a virtual level. We have the Bennington Community Theater that is, they have a series of new play readings, and those are done online. And we'll look at moving those into hybrid, and those happen through the beginning of April. We have one next Thursday, and that would be The Only Lonely, written by Robin McDuffie. These are new plays written. And then we have Old Castle Theater Company, our resident professional theater, who we had to cancel they had to cancel their season last summer, but we are hopeful and very proactive that we are going to have a summer season. And we're looking at options for outside, and hopefully we'll be able to open our doors. But we are very hopeful that we'll be able to perform live once again in person.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing a lot of sort of hybrid or with the option for hybrid, because I imagine, you know, for a place like the Bennington Performing Arts Center, usually you'd be booking out quite far in advance. But there's so much uncertainty that must make scheduling really difficult.
It's that you're just constantly having the sand shift underneath you, and you can't say, yes, we'll be able to, because you just really don't know with formal performance. But it's also opened up, like I'm hearing the other directors talk, and while it's been so frustrating on so many levels, you know, you're closed down, you're used to performing live. But it's also opened up collaboration, and that people can come to our storytelling events from all over the country. It's not just around Bennington. We have collaboration with artists from around the country and different theater groups. I think it's opened up a collaboration between theaters and other community members, because we need each other, and dialogues have started where they may not have, given the situation that we're in. So I think any opportunity to open up collaboration and community effort to bring the performing arts out is a positive within this weird situation that we're in.
Well,
so you always have to take, you know, the good. And so that's been opening up our door and being able to bring the performing arts out of the theater and into people's homes. And that's something that I think, even beyond the pandemic, I think that it will be something that we will continue to offer on some level is, if you can't make it into the theater, you can still enjoy a live performance.
Yeah, which is so neat. That's Jennifer Jasper, Executive Director of the Bennington Performing Arts Center. Jennifer, thank you very much, and good luck to you as well.
Thank you.
More to come. We're talking about how people in the creative sector in Vermont are trying to navigate the pandemic, plan for the future. We're hearing from some organizations and performers who are doing well, but we certainly know that not all are. And if you're really struggling, I want to acknowledge that it's not all just about creative solutions. And that there are a lot of people who rely on live performances and the art sector, but aren't necessarily performers themselves and are really in a bind as well. So just acknowledging that your situation may be very different from what you're hearing today. Let's go to Samantha, who's calling in from Brandon. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? What's your experience?
So I am a hat maker in Brandon, and my partner Nora and I, we are Swan and Stone Millinery, and we, pre-pandemic, depended almost exclusively on in-person art shows. And so when everything sort of started shutting down and all our shows were canceled, we actually turned to some artist friends who were all in similar situations, having to sort of pivot to online. And we formed Art Party Central, which is, we've been doing these virtual art parties. We sort of just found that collectively we were much stronger and could reach a much broader audience. And so we promote our parties through just our email lists and our social media. Sorry, I just helped my son in from sledding, which is
we're all doing all of it all the time right now. Samantha, you're a great example of how this is, you know, working and not working. And yes, your hats are beautiful. I've been a longtime admirer of your hats. Thank you for sharing a little bit about what you're doing and the creative ways to come up with sort of virtual shows or to still get people excited about them. You know, the Vermont Comedy Club has been holding online improv shows and performances throughout the last year. Here's one of the skits they perform. It's called Quick Court.
Tonight on Quick Court, Marie, a dog trainer who only refers to herself and others in the third person, is suing Narfalac, the candy factory night security guard that oddly seems to like it when kids trespass, for the offense of spraying their cologne on a gift. Both the litigants have been sworn in and have brought their case to the fastest courtroom in the world, where time is precious and justice waits for no one. All rise for the occasionally honorable Eric F. Wright. Quick Court is now in session. Hey, it's Quick Court. Settle down. We got no time. It's Quick Court.
All right, that's Quick Court. And here to tell us a little bit more about what's happening at the Vermont Comedy Club is Natalie Miller, one of the co-founders. Natalie, nice to talk with you.
Oh, good to talk to you, too. I've got a bonus guest for you. My husband, Nathan, was out, but he's back now, so he's here, too.
You're going to have to talk at the same time because we got like 4 minutes for you, so you're going to have to speak over each other. But you know, when it comes to doing things virtually for a comedy club, I mean, so much of live comedy is really the performers and the audience feeding off one another and that atmosphere building into something really cool or sometimes really scary for a performer who's not necessarily doing well. But how do you manage that for a comedy club when everything is virtual?
Yeah, it's definitely been really challenging. We've tried a bunch of different things. One of the things that we've found is that a lot of our shows are very, very interactive in the chat. So we have chat aggregators, and as we're streaming most of our shows to Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook simultaneously, and this chat aggregator pulls all of the comments together so that we can be interacting with and talking to the people who are watching the shows.
Yeah, nothing's the same as live laughter, but there are, you know, people have done comedy shows at drive-ins with cars honking when they think something's funny. I think just performers are adjusting their expectation of what they think positive feedback is.
Right, I know. The honking would put me off, I think.
Yeah, we've also, you know, a lot of our shows now, the performers are, it's a group of performers. Generally, they're all on the screen at the same time. And so the performers are laughing for each other. So there is some kind of feedback happening within that, even though it's not necessarily the audience per se.
Do you think people are craving comedy right now in that way that we often do in times of stress. It's like, just give me something to let this stress out and to laugh and feel good. Or, you know, on the flip side, though, people could feel more sensitive and comedy could land really differently now, depending on what your life situation is. So how are you and performers navigating those two sides of the same coin?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I always think there's room for comedy, especially in hard times. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you just have to be sensitive in times like this about your, you know, the subject that you're joking about and how you do it. And I have noticed certainly there is like a propensity for lighter comedy. And we're looking on the sillier side here right now, especially in terms of being online, because we're not doing a lot of dark satirical stuff online like that. Then the people will click off and move on to something else.
I've definitely had a lot of people come up to me and say that they are craving that comedy club experience. So like the catharsis of being in a room with other people laughing and telling me that the comedy club is going to be like the first place they go once everyone is vaccinated and we're open again. So yeah, I think there's definitely like this sense of tension that is desperate for a release of laughter.
And speaking of still being closed, I understand you're doing a virtual comedy marathon to celebrate a year of being closed.
Yeah. You can call it a celebration. Sure. yeah. March 13th will mark a year of being closed, which has been very difficult. And we're doing a comedy marathon. It's going to be hours and hours and hours of comedy programming of all different kinds. And we'll have some celebrity drop-ins. And we're going to be raising money for the club reopening. And it's just going to be a really fun, again, fun, silly time.
Well, I'm fun and silly sounds good to me at this point. That's Natalie Miller and Nathan Hartswick, the co-founders of the Vermont Comedy Club in Burlington. Natalie and Nathan, thanks and good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go to Evan Primo, who's calling in from Marshfield. Hi, Evan. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane.
So what's
thanks
your experience been?
Call.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, thanks for acknowledging the real struggle that performing artists are going through right now, because it was a complete cancellation, really, of everything that is our world. But my wife and I run Squag Mountain Music, in addition to being performing artists out in the world. And we've found some ways to connect to our community. In fact, it feels like we're more connected to our community here in Vermont in some ways than we were even before the pandemic.
How so?
Well, we feel really like there's a need for connection, and music has always been our way to connect with people, and it feels like nobody's taking that for granted right now. And so the offerings that we put out there are met with such appreciation. So we do this after-hours pop-up concert series sponsored by Montpelier Live, where we'll go into a Montpelier business after they've closed their doors and put on a little concert there virtually for 30 minutes as a way to connect people to their community and the local businesses, but in a safe way. And so we've been doing that throughout the fall and winter and doing workshops online and Lullaby Project.
Evan, it sounds like you're still just as busy as ever, even if it's changed. And I love that idea that people aren't taking for granted what they're getting from performers and that give and take that can happen on both sides. That's Evan Primo, director of Scrag Mountain Music. Thank you. And I'm sorry to cut you off and to cut Samantha off, but I want to make sure that we also have time to get to our last guest today, Justin Marsh, who performs in their drag queen persona, Emoji Nightmare, often in partnership with Nikki Champagne, portrayed by now Vermont legislator Taylor Small. Justin, nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you took a break from drag at the beginning of the pandemic. What about now? Are you back in drag?
Yeah, it was a welcome break.
You were doing a lot.
We were doing a lot, yeah. And so this summer, though, I got kind of that itch to get back into it. So we started doing, I started making music videos, actually, really channeling my inner pop star. And actually, it was a great way for Nikki to still be involved in drag, so because she's been shooting all my videos for me. But then I've been editing them, and we've been putting on some virtual shows this winter, and it's been a really fun way to still get out in front of folks.
Can you tell me a little bit about My Chubby Valentine, your fat dragon burlesque show that you were a part of just recently?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was with a burlesque artist that I perform with a lot in Burlington, Katniss Everqueer. And her and I wanted to make sure that we were celebrating some bodies that don't usually get showcased. And we were able to connect with artists in Maine and Washington, D.C., and really display people we would never get to perform with probably in Burlington, because we would have to put them up in hotels and pay for their travel. So it was really nice to be able to have a virtual show where everyone could be included.
Has that been an upside of this, that not only, you know, can people watch you from wherever, but you can also engage with other performers who aren't necessarily in the same physical space as you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was able to meet some queens down in Boston and the burlesque artists in Portland. It was really, that's been definitely a plus. I would also say for the producers, it's a lot more work and, you know, editing the videos and putting all together and working with technology. I have to drive to Essex to get good internet so that I can actually make this show happen. So it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but we're definitely finding how to make it work.
You know, you have a pretty big drag persona in Vermont and you're fairly well known, but I'm curious about the drag scene in general. And if you see people surviving, not surviving, I mean, you know, how is the scene holding up?
I think in Vermont, there's no artists here who are doing this solely as their only thing. But I think in larger cities where people rely on it as their main source of income, it's a lot harder for them. But, you know, here in Vermont, that's not sustainable in the first place, even outside of a pandemic. So relying on my full-time job has been really nice. And yeah, I think we've held it together for the most part here in Vermont. And we know that we'll get back to it, and we miss Higher Ground, and we can't wait to partner with them, and hopefully we all survive this pandemic.
Justin Marsh is a drag queen who performs under the name Emoji Nightmare. Justin, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
And thanks to everyone who shared your perspective with us today, and everyone out there who is trying to make it work and trying to give something to the community through your artwork and creativity. It's certainly something that everybody needs these days. So let us know how you're surviving. If you'd like to, you can always email Vermont Edition at vpr.org.